Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, Guilty Feminist. This is Deborah. We are recording our final live episode of The Guilty Feminist of 2021 at Shakespeare's Globe as part of their Women and Power season, 6 p.m. on Sunday, the 12th of December. My guest co-host will be Sophie Duker. Our guest will be Kathy Lett. And we also have music and possibly another very exciting guest who I'm not allowed to announce yet. And on the 16th of December at the Union Chapel, we are doing our Christmas show, Camp as Christmas. I'm co-hosting that with Tom Allen, and I can now announce that Self Esteem, the musical sensation of the year, number one song and number one album from The Guardian, is going to play a 20-minute acoustic set. Where else can you see Self Esteem, Sandy Toksvig, Jessica Foster Q, Grace Petrie, Jen Brister, Travis Alabanza, and Raven Smith on the same bill? I challenge you to find anywhere else in the world, in the history of the world. Do not miss it. The proceeds go to the Say It Loud Club, which is run for and by LGBTQ plus refugees. Everyone on the bill is LGBTQ plus. And half of the proceeds are going to Can Do, alarming Syrian schools from airstrikes. You really won't want to miss it. We're also doing a brilliant auction. At the auction, you'll be able to bid on a personalized video from Andrew Scott, the hot priest himself from Fleabag, dinner for four with Rob Rinder. Presumably, he'll be able to weigh in on your relationship arguments. A signed cast poster of Feel Good from Mae Martin. It is going to be an event and a half. For both these shows, check the links in the show notes or go to guiltyfeminist.com. I also wanted to say thank you so much to everybody who came out and supported my live stand-up show at Soho Theatre, and I will be announcing more dates for that show soon if you missed out. And don't forget to listen to our new podcast from the House of the Guilty Feminist, Media Storm, which is an investigative journalism which focuses on the voices that are asked last. There are two episodes out now, one on refugees and one on Asian hate. You can find those wherever you get your podcast, Media Storm. And watch out for more podcasts from the House of the Guilty Feminist. And now, on with the podcast. I'm a feminist, but I'd give up the right to vote in one local election if I could have either Jennifer Aniston's or Dolly Alderton's hair forever without having to blow dry it ever, because I live in a safe Labour seat. Now, they're not going to notice that I get the good hair forever, and then I've got more time for feminism because I'm not worried about my hair. Balances out, gang. I'd have to have a much longer negotiation with the devil, though, if I were to give up the right to vote in a general election, even though I live in a safe Labour seat, But I think I'd be quite good at that if I had to do a negotiation with the devil. I feel like I'd be like in Succession, you know, when they negotiate for things and say, what's the play and stuff. And I imagine myself in that situation. I'd be Cousin Greg looking at Logan Roy saying...
I think you have a shiv about you. Not a Greg.
Oh, I have. But this in this week's episode, this is a spoiler. So if you haven't watched it yet, just go la, 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 la. Okay.
The audible hiss there was like, don't you dare. Yeah,
should I? But you have to go la, 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 or you will hear it. So everyone who's... Okay,
that'll make for a great podcast, won't it?
Logan Roy says to Cousin Greg, you've got some leverage. What do you want? And Greg replies, what can I get? Greg coming into his own. I'm so sorry if that spoiled anything for anyone. But also, I just... You should have watched it by now. It's your own fault.
That's true.
If you were a real Succession fan,
yeah,
you would have watched it by now. What was it's that? True. Was that a heckle about Succession? No.
Don't you dare.
This is No, I'm happy to have Succession heckles.
I'm not. Won't hear a bad word against the lot of them.
I am quite rooting, this is another I'm a feminist but really, but I am quite rooting for Jerry and Roman to get together. But mostly because I'm really in for a woman who is enjoying middle-aged kink.
That's not I'm a feminist, but that's I'm a feminist and Jerry can get it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but why am I rooting?
Go Jerry.
But why am I rooting for any of these incredibly rich, evil people to get anything, is what I'm saying. Like, for me, they're the sort of will they, won't they. It's kind of like the Niles and Daphne of the show.
Yeah, and Roman's doing a real coy act this episode. Sorry, he is, and it's adorable. But, of course, yeah, obviously they're all deplorable, but... At least they're self-aware about it.
Not
and also, those sex scenes are hot. But why? But they are.
I know.
Why?
That's what I think about it. I fancy Roman, but why?
Like, I fancy Jerry.
I fancy Jerry and Roman. But I think I did say on the Succession podcast, Firecrotch and Normcore, with Sarah Barron and Jeff Lloyd,
it's a very good podcast.
That my ultimate, because they said, who is your Succession? If you could have sex with anyone, who would it be?
Yeah.
And I said it would be a threesome with Jerry and Shiv. And they pointed out that Jerry is Shiv's godmother, and then I felt bad.
Oh, I'm sorry. So she taught her well? Like, what's the... That's not a bad thing, is it?
Not according to her.
They're not related. No. That's fine. Godmothers aren't real.
Catherine.
It would have to be indoors. Those women need sun cream, but it'll be fine. That'll be great. Mm. Interesting.
These are just some suggestions for Succession fan fiction for you.
I now have such a strong visual that we should probably move on. Here's what I'd say. I'd give up a general election vote forever if I didn't have to blow dry my hair ever again. There, I said it. And you know what? I think I would convince more people to vote the way I wanted them to with my excellent hair.
Oh, so you're going to go around proxying your vote. So you give up the right to vote. You never have to blow dry again.
Yep.
But you think that the chicness of your hair is going to convince others to vote your way.
Also, think how early I am out the door, Deborah. I'd be up in the morning convincing people before 9 o'clock. Good to go.
So here's my genuine...
That's my deal with the devil and I'm fine with it.
I mean, she might be listening.
We can but hope.
Can I just say though, would you, and I'm asking you this really truly,
yeah,
would you use that extra time that you didn't have to worry about your hair, blow dry your hair is everything, Anthony, would you actually use it for activism and feminism?
Yes.
I don't believe you.
Okay, I would use half the time to wank, Deborah, but the rest of the time.
Thank you.
With
That's
my
all
increased...
I wanted to hear. We are honest here at the Guilty Feminist.
But I've been looking at myself with Deborah Frances Wyson's hair, which would also be fine. But with Rachel's hair.
Oh my
hair.
God! Don't give up your right to vote for my fucking hair. It takes ages. There's so much of it, and it doesn't do what you want. I need to get blow dryers.
Okay, fine.
Dolly Alderton or Jennifer Aniston? That's the hair you want.
Jennifer probably makes more sense for my colouring.
We're giving this a lot of thought. You should do
I'm
a feminist.
Sorry, yes, I'm a feminist, but I am a feminist, but I have absolutely no interest in hearing Jolene's version of events. None whatsoever.
Are we not, though, forgetting that I feel like the real villain in this piece is neither Jolene nor Dolly, but in fact, my man. What kind of cunt is he that he's playing off these two women against each other?
I just don't want to know either of them.
Okay. I don't think that's much solidarity. I feel like...
And I'm a feminist, but...
I know, that's fair enough, yeah. That's true.
If I was a feminist, yeah, obviously. He can do one, but Yeah. In the meantime, I'm with Dolly every time.
Actually, I sort of do know what you mean now that you've said that.
Do you know what I mean?
Because Dolly, if Dolly's telling us the story, you don't go, oh, we'll see it from Jolene's point of view. You're right.
Do you know what I mean? You
solidarity
don't.
Should be with Dolly.
I agree.
Yeah.
If you're any kind of feminist, Dolly Parton's your number one.
You heard that here. We might get t-shirts that say that. Guilty Feminist t-shirts. If you're any kind of feminist, any kind, Dolly Parton's your number one.
Okay. I thought that would get more support. I'll be honest with you. Thank you. Okay, good. Good.
Okay, all right. Sorry, my phone's locked. And it doesn't... My face ID... All I do is stare into the eyes of this fucking phone. Day and night.
The eyes?
And then it goes, I don't know who you are. And I'm like, who do you know? We're in a monogamous fucking relationship.
The eyes of the phone.
Well, you know, when it says face ID, and sometimes it doesn't, it says I don't recognize you. And I'm like, how?
That's rude.
How
phones
can you
are
not
rude. That's
I mean,
rude.
All I do is look at you.
Is in the morning? My phone doesn't recognize me in the morning, and I find that really passag. Like, do you know what I mean? It's rude. Go on, please.
Okay. I'm a feminist, but last night I won the Game Changer Award at the Comedy Women in Print Awards.
Thank you. So far, just to brag.
Commonly known as the Quips. And today, I've got to admit, I'm a little crazed with power. mostly, I've just been going around thinking, yeah, I'm a fucking game changer. That's a game. I'll change it. Like Monopoly. I'm going to fuck you up. I was just thinking this morning, you know, Hungry Hippos. What the fuck is that about? Like, are you looking at the hippos and going, oh, they're fat, so therefore they must be hungry? Are you like stereotyping and body shaming hippos? Because in a very real way, that is just the shape of a hippo's body. I'm going to change that game. I'm going to call it Mindfully Eating Hippos. Game changed.
Doesn't have the same alliteration.
Nope, don't care. I'm a game changer.
Fine, she's a game changer.
Listen, games have already got too much alliteration. I'm changing the game.
Is the power from the game changing award or the tie?
The tie. Oh, yeah. Well, the tie, I think, has come out because of the award.
Oh, interesting.
It's a sort of patriarchal...
Chicken and egg.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Also, I'm very into sort of that, sort of, you know, Harry Styles and the sort of gender fluidity, gender expression movement that's going on at the moment. Mm-hmm. I'm finding both empowering, also just sexy. Thank you very much.
It's so sexy.
Sexy, yeah.
It's sexy.
And I just love that... There are people in who is as cool and powerful as Harry Styles. He is powerful. He's influential. Coming out on stage and going, there's nothing risible about this. There's nothing funny about this. I'm going to play this with absolute earnestness and dedication. I'm going to sing this. Because how much easier is it for a kid at school who no one's expecting to wear a skirt to the school disco to wear a skirt to the school disco and then you're making fun of them. You're making fun of fucking Harry Styles. Yeah. You cooler than Harry Styles, are you? You're fucking cooler than Harry Styles. I want to go to school discos now so I can kind of bully kids who are bullying kids with pictures of Harry Styles.
I very much picked that up from you. Like you it felt like you'd rehearsed that, like you were good to go.
Yeah,
you
know what I mean? I've got the outfit.
You think you're cooler than Harry Styles? I'm like, wow, that would be an intense energy at a school disco. No. I'm just going to carry on with the game as it is. I'm sorry, Deborah. No.
Why am I there? That's the question.
That is a bigger
got.
Question. What is a bigger question.
I am inappropriately there.
It's a secondary school at least. Neither are appropriate. I don't know why I qualified.
You go.
I'm a feminist, but today I built a cupboard and I spent most of the time doing that, wishing my dad was doing it for me instead.
I mean,
or indeed any man. I just thought, I wish a man was wasting his life this way. And not me.
I absolutely hear that and would have forced a man to do it.
Do you know what the worst part was?
No.
My girlfriend wasn't even in. So I got no credit.
What do you mean wasn't even in? When she came back, did you not go, oh, look, I've built this?
She didn't come back. I hope she comes back.
That's a little worrying.
Oh.
Did you not make a little video of yourself doing it so she could see you being...
No, I didn't. Sort of... I'm not sure I'm that body confident that I'd be like, someone should film this. But yeah, no one witnessed me do it. So
you could have got a task rabbit in and then told her you did
What's
it.
What's a task rabbit?
Oh, well. The response from the audience will tell you you do need to know. It's not like a rampant rabbit.
Okay,
but their response did make it sound like it was a rampant rabbit.
It sounded like a sex toy.
No.
That was more specifically named.
No. Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe you can order a task rabbit for that. I don't know. But as far as I know...
What is a task rabbit?
It's just a person that comes to the house and does odd jobs. But now it sounds... Yeah.
Do you mean like a handyman?
And now that's,
which
that
also
still
sounds
rude.
Now that I've said it that way.
A handyman still sounds rude.
Yeah, it does.
And now everything sounds rude. Not rude. Rude is the wrong word.
Why are they called rabbit?
Sexual.
Which is perfectly fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're called Task Rabbits. I don't know why. It's just the name of the app. If you need shelves putting up, go on Task Rabbit. You'll see a load of people. It's like Tinder, but for hanging pictures.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. That's funny. Cool. I love that this woman didn't laugh, but instead went, "That's funny."
I've been on Zoom for so long. I'm delighted to hear people specifically spell it out for me. "That's funny. Thank you. I need that validation." And listen, now if you don't say "that's funny," I'm going to think, "Was that not funny?" I might sometimes come to you and just look for some, like, just nod if it's funny. Thank you.
I love an ongoing actual review as this gig's happening.
Yeah, listen, if it's like this one, I'm rich.
Yeah, it's fine.
Super
a woman almost lying down just shouting, "That's funny." Where are you from?
New York?
Wandsworth.
No, you're
not. That's not a Wandsworth voice.
You have to pause and think about how they say it here, which is what I have to do, so I know you fucking aren't.
You're sort of reclined like you're on a chaise longue as well. I'm loving your whole attitude. It's fantastic. I want to be you.
They don't have vocal fry in Wandsworth. That's a Californian if ever I heard.
I thought it was a bit more New York. You know, that sort of, you know, "Welcome to the Theatre Guild Awards." Felt like that to me. I'm a feminist, but tonight I asked our amazing guest, Soph Kalustian.
You did.
Thank you. Would you like to prepare backstage in the wings while Catherine and I do the first half of the show? Or would you like to watch the show from the theatre? And she said, "If it's all right with you, I'll watch." And I said, "That's what she said."
And she and I just sort of looked to the ground. Like,
she said, I'd like to watch. She said, no, she said, "I'd like to watch. If it's all right with you, I'd like to watch." And it was something like the turn of phrase, "I'd like to watch," that
don't
I'd heard
her
before.
Don't put it on Soph. No.
No, she was very innocent in her desire to watch, but it just was the way she said, "I'd like to watch," that made me think, I've heard that before somewhere.
Somewhere specific. After I ordered a task rabbit on the app. Good.
As Roman said to me as I got into bed with Shiv and Jerry.
Oh, he would watch. And I'd watch that episode. The point is, I'm a feminist, but I'm also a really bad driver. Both can be true, guys. Both can be true.
I am such a bad driver now. I didn't used to be, but I'm out of practice. And I tried to drive a carload of people to Latitude. And I went on a motorway and hadn't been on a motorway for years. And I ended up,
the game?
Oh, yeah. We had to pull over to a roadside service station and put someone else on the insurance so they could drive us the rest of the way. And it was the only man in the car.
No! No! No, you didn't.
Are people actually walking out? I feel like that was such a response.
You pulled into the Heart Children and were like, "We sit here till somebody else is insured."
No,
on this car.
I think I was sort of trying to get off one road onto another, and I wouldn't go out. I just didn't have the courage to go out. And they were like, "Go now, go now." So instead I got stuck on a hard shoulder and everyone was screaming,
Deborah,
thinking we were going to be killed. Yeah. And then the only only man in the car, I think there were two women in the car who couldn't drive, didn't have licenses.
Classic us.
And then there was a man and he was like, "I will drive," but we had to get him on the insurance. So we had to pull over at a roadside service station and wait half an hour. I'm not proud, but I am honest.
Yes, yes. That should be applauded.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah.
Live from the Soho Theatre, the Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis, my guest co-host Catherine Bohart, and our very special guest Soph Kalustian, talking about learning being cyclical.
This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists, our hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. I'm Deborah Frances White, with me is Catherine Bohart, and we are talking about learning is cyclical. And this is something Catherine and I were talking about in anticipation of this show, that learning is cyclical. You think you've learnt, and then you think, oh, I'm past that now, and then it fucking comes back. In anticipation of bringing on a guest, instead of me doing stand-up, I'm just going to do a one-minute poem. It's not really a poem, it's a sort of performance piece, because our guest is a poet. So, okay. So I thought, you know, I'll do this less well than her. And just realised what I've done.
It's very welcoming. That's nice. This
is on the theme of learning is cyclical, and it's called Why Does Confidence Arrive Just As Collagen Is Leaving the Building? I finally learned to love my face with all its roundness and undulations. Even the parts the patriarchy told me aren't symmetrical and so can't be lovable. I learned to love that my face needs sizable earrings to frame it, because delicate ones get lost on me, as my mother told me when I turned 16 and tried to borrow my sister's delicate silver pearly pins. Get lost on me, like they'd gone orienteering on my huge mountain of a head. And we're now gasping for water, making SOS signals. I hope that is the laughter of a large-headed person. Laughing in solidarity. I learned to love that my head was like Mount Rushmore. It made me feel stately and important. I learned to love my high cheekbones like ski slopes and admire them as others did. I learned to accept them and compliments. I learned to love my face, finally. And 3 weeks later, it started to change. And now I'm like, what the fuck is this? I liked my old face. I loved it. I always loved it. I realise that now. My jawline still looks sharp in photos because I know my angles, as a photographer once told me in a slightly judgmental voice, as if that made me vain. With a tone that implied being vain is a bad thing, when really it's just a hyperbolic form of self-love that's hard won. I've learned to love my still-posed face, but suspect, and always have done, that I'm better looking in photos than real life. I'll never know for sure unless I have an out-of-body experience, but if I do, I'll be too busy judging my body to notice my face. But when I animate my face on a video now, somehow it does not look like me anymore. I will have to learn to love my face from scratch, because it is slightly new. If it takes me as long to like my new face as it did to like my old face, I might be dead before I get there. So I'd better learn faster before it changes again and I decide this one was perfect. Why does confidence arrive just as collagen is leaving the building? Maybe you only need one or the other. Thank you. Together, alive and warm and real and touchy and not at all like on a zoomy, horrible screen. I found the shows very difficult via Zoom because it's just hard to be funny in pyjamas. And I tried to get out of them. It's not like I didn't make the attempt, but I never did. So here we are, not in pyjamas. Just a cheer for no pyjamas. Absolutely. It, on the podcast, that's going to sound like we're naked. But did anyone do anything feminist in the last, you know, through the lockdown just before or just after? Anyone do anything feminist? And can I just start by saying, I don't want anybody too good to answer first. And the reason I say that is recently I was at the South Bank, and the first person who put the hand up was Jamie Klingler from Reclaim These Streets. And she said, yes, I've just raised £500,000 to take Cressida Dick to court because she stopped us having a vigil. And then no one else wanted to say anything. So I'm not saying you can be too good a feminist, I'm saying you can speak too soon. You could be too early a feminist. So I'm looking for the smallest act of feminism possible so that the others in the room feel reassured and they think, oh, yeah, I can do better than that. So can I have the house lights up a tiny bit? Otherwise, I can't really see anybody. Great. Not so much as to scare them. I don't want anyone to feel exposed because someone might have worn their pyjamas and now they're going to be like, oh, shit, I didn't know it was a dress code. Is the house lights up a tiny bit? No, I can't. Okay. Never mind. Listen, I mean, that's such a... I'm so sorry. This is a real I'm a feminist, but never mind. No need for the house lights. I'm so sorry to have troubled you. There are men in the booth. I don't want to trouble them. I don't want to trouble any of the men in the booth. Also, I've assumed there's men in the booth. There might be women in the booth. And now I've misgendered the whole of the lighting booth. Who's in the booth? Who run the world? Yay! Who light the show? It's meant to be girls. Girls. Can we have the house lights up a bit or no? Are they? That can't be house lights up, can it? Oh, okay. Hey! Now I can see the audience. So if you've done something feminist, but something that won't intimidate others, just pop your hand up. Anyone thinks they've got it? Yes.
I did a women in art course.
A women in art course. Okay. All right. Great. But what we're looking for is something like, I let my eyebrows grow out during the lockdown. Do you know what I mean? Something that's a women in art course. That seems like a commitment. It seems like, did you show up for it every week? Yeah, no. I'm sorry. As much as we love that, I can see faces of panic all around. Like, I didn't do a fucking course. I didn't know I had to go to college. I didn't know I had to... Was this after? Do you have a job as well? Nobody's buying it. She signed up for a course. Did it cost money?
A small amount.
Okay. Did you have homework? Okay. So it was just you turned up. So were you just watching TED Talks, essentially? Because if so, we might be able to allow it. And also, you're wearing a Power to the Girls shirt. You've come prepared. Come prepared. I'm looking for a smaller act of feminism than that. Yes. Oh, see, it started off and I was thinking, what? That's better than hers. But then it tailed off at the end. It's like a pure act of guilty feminism, that is, isn't it? So the student you mentored went to uni.
Yeah, she had her first year in lockdown. I felt really sorry for her.
So you sent her not Sylvia Plath, not Virginia Woolf, not Maya Angelou. You sent her vodka. Yeah, okay, we're going to go with that one. We're going to go with that one. I like you. I would like you to mentor me. Because vodka is actually my drink. And in some very real ways during the lockdown, I did need a mentor. Where were you then? That's all I'm asking. What do you do?
I'm a law student.
Oh, you're a law student. So were you mentoring a younger law student?
No, she's actually English literature.
Oh. Were you helpful in any way? Or did you... I think you just got her smashed. Is that a mentor or is that an older irresponsible drinking buddy? That's a very loose use of the word mentor. Were you mentoring her in ways of sort of helping her with her UCAS form and stuff?
Yeah, from when she was 15, so it's been quite a while.
And how old was she when you started supplying the alcohol? Only 18. Okay, great. Has anyone got one final one that is slower than that? More minuscule than that? The most minuscule act of feminism? Yes. And we have a winner! Thank you very much! Sorry, what's your name? Or maybe you don't know what to say. You can make up a name.
I'm proud of it. My name's Neve.
I'm proud of it. My name's Neve. She just said, if you didn't hear that at the back, Neve just said, in case you didn't hear it at home, I gave up shaving my bush and I'm trying to work out if I need to shave it tomorrow in anticipation of my smear. Was that the exact words? Similar. Yeah. Okay, great. Are you ready for the show? Yeah. Then please welcome to the stage my incredible co-pilot for this evening. It's the wonderful Catherine Bohart.
Hi, how are you? Are you well? Good. Oh my gosh.
smash the American woman's sat up. It's getting real, guys. This is exciting. Hello, I'm Catherine. Did you have a good apocalypse? Sweet, mine was dog shit. Here's the thing. I got broken up with in my second lockdown. We were all in the same ones. In lockdown two and lockdown three, that meant I had to do therapy. In lockdown, anyone else do it in lockdown? Yes. Oh my God, only this audience would be like, yes, good. Of course we did. You had to do it on Zoom. Comedy on Zoom was, I think, just about okay. Therapy on Zoom. That's not where that belongs, is it? Because I think the thing about therapy is usually you kind of go through a couple of steps that make the whole facade feel like you could really change your life, right? Like you go to a generic room with white walls and a cushion that could be any age and a lady in a cardigan and art that says nothing and maybe a curtain on a window or just a wall. And that's fine. But you know that the act of doing that makes you feel like, yeah, this is my time, right? On Zoom, it doesn't work like that. On Zoom, the main problem is that you can see into the therapist's house. And that means you know they can't help you. Now, I had a lovely therapist. Her name was Lisa. Lisa did her best. But Lisa's Christmas tree was up until March. That's not a well woman. Lisa can't help me. She did her best, but it just didn't work when you could see in. And I really needed therapy during lockdown. I should say, I thank you for going with the mental health stuff. It means I feel like I can comfortably talk to you about speaking to myself, which I did a lot during lockdown. Anyone else live alone during lockdown? Yes? Did you talk to yourself? Sweet. Okay, I did. A lot of people are like, I just sang. Oh, I can't sing. Okay? So I talked to myself. I think that's fine. I was usually just like telling myself what I needed to do during the day. And I wanted to use my lovely voice. I didn't want to lose my accent. Could end up sounding like Alexa. I thought, no, I'm going to keep talking. I'm going to keep talking. I'm going to keep it. But I did talk to myself. I think that's fine. I think it's perfectly fine to talk to yourself. Frankly, I think more of us should do it. I mean, I think there's a line. Like, I don't think it should be the best chat you have in a day. I think there's like signs that it's gone too far. Like, I don't think you should learn anything. You know what I mean? There shouldn't be any new information in a chat with yourself, is what I think. I think at the point at which you say, oh, really? Stop talking to yourself. That's my line. But I did. I needed the therapy. I thought because of my breakup, but actually something happened during lockdown that I didn't want to admit to myself, which is I have obsessive compulsive disorder. And it tends to be triggered by change and stress, but I mean, thankfully, haven't experienced any of that. And so, but I didn't want to admit to myself that it might need dealing with again because I've already dealt with it. And the type of OCD I have is called perfectionism, which sounds like a joke because it sounds good. Right? Perfectionism as OCD sounds a bit like if you say your eating disorder is like model's disease. It's like that sounds fine. You're a guilty feminist audience. Come on, we can laugh at that. It's fine. I just feel like it sounds like a good thing, but it's not. And the problem with perfectionists is that we tend to be very, very good at recovery. Like the best at recovery. We're so good at recovering. Like we're ace at recovery. Like we're so... The reason I tell people I have OCD is so I can tell them I'm dealing with my OCD. Like I've dealt with my OCD. That's how I recover. I like to put my recovery on a shelf as a trophy. It's not a game changer award, guys, but it's a pretty big deal. And so I like to think of myself as recovered. So I really struggled with admitting that it might be an issue again, which is mad because everyone around me could see it was an issue again. You know when you watch those horrible ITV dramas and everyone in the show is like, I wonder who the killer is. And you're like, it's the famous person who hasn't had a line yet. It's obviously the famous person. And they're like, who? What? Who could it be? So it was just me constantly calling my mother, being like, I feel anxious and awful and I'm scared to go outside and I don't know what it is. I'm like, maybe, I don't know, is Mercury rising? Like, what could I... And she was just like, or it could be the fact that you famously have OCD, Catherine. Could it be that? And I was like, I don't think so. And I really struggled with admitting it, but I do. It's bad, and I'm trying to deal with it. What I do find hard is to explain it to other people, though. So if you don't have obsessive compulsive disorder, if you don't have any intrusive thoughts, I guess what it feels like is a bit like, you know, if your neighbor's playing music, but then it just keeps getting incrementally louder, and someone else is trying to talk to you about their life and something interesting, important, and you're like, yeah. What did he say? That's God, that's my... Is you. Except that you can't say it because no one else can hear it. So you're just the lady who first admitted to speaking to herself and now can hear music that's not playing. And but I will say, trying to describe it, but here's how it feels. If you're like me, I spent all of lockdown feeding my compulsions, raising them, nurturing them, taking care of them. They were my priority every single day. But now we have to go back to life, don't we? And so they've noticed that they're not my number one priority. So they're sort of kicking up a bit of a fuss. They're like, I'm sorry, remember when we were the focus? Can we make us the focus again? So leaving the house every day is a bit like leaving five young children. Like they scream and they kick at the door. They're like, but we're hungry. And then you go out in the hall, you can still hear them and you feel like a really bad parent. And then you get in the bus and you do have that like lingering guilt. And then all day you think, I'm sure I'm forgetting something. But I think just like kids, you know, you just have to ignore, ignore, ignore. And they'll be fine. They should raise themselves. Is that it? I don't have children. Is that right? Okay, good. What I'm saying is, I need this wine. I deserve this wine. And I hope you've all been very well during lockdown. And if you're not, it's a good time to do therapy because now you can go to the offices again. So you can really believe that those women have their shit together. Isn't that lovely? Yes. Okay, good. You've been very nice. See you later.
Catherine Bohart, everybody.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Our guest today is a comedian, writer, and actress known for creating and starring in her comedy threesome, Peckheads, on BBC Three, and for her incisive spoken word poetry. Please welcome to the stage and the mic, Soph Galustian!
Okay, Deborah, that was a beautiful poem. And I just want to put it out there, I am a watcher. I heard what you said earlier.
That's such great information to have. And doesn't make me at all feel like I'm now in a Me Too situation as your employer.
Hashtag.
Yeah.
I explore the street nervously. My key rests between my fingers purposefully. My knuckles turn white as I clench so tight. I consider ordering a taxi that I can't afford to safely deliver me to my front door. But then I panic. What if the driver likes me? I just want to get home safely. I hear footsteps behind me. I clench my fist and I grip the key tighter. Ready to apply self-defense, my legs started to shake and my shoulders were tense. A lady overtook me as she innocently walked her dog. She vanished into the night as she started to jog. Brave, I thought. I desperately wanted her to return. I wanted her to sense my concern of being a woman alone in this night. It was snowing, but strangely sweat formed on my forehead. Why did walking home alone fill me with such dread? Because some men have made us feel unsafe in society. They filled us with self-doubt and anxiety as they shout out of their dusty vans about where they'd like to put their hands. If you ignore them, you're ungrateful. And if you entertain them, well, then you're shameful. We're called a bitch for being assertive and we're called cute for being nervous. For a man to confirm his masculinity, we must highlight our societal given stupidity. Deprive ourselves of our strong femininity. We're seen as heavenly if we still have our virginity. We're only good for cooking and cleaning. We must only speak when spoken to, no intervening. Being a woman is mostly being misunderstood. We're confused for weak. for no good. We must not forget we've got a lower social stature than a man. We cannot achieve half of what he can. We're weak in the body and in the mind, like he can see, and we are blind. We've got no backbone, we're too kind, and if we're strong, we're unrefined. So get back in your lane. Life's no place for a woman. It's a man's game. We're not equal and we're not the same. And if we're silent, we're still the ones to blame. Maybe your skirt was too short, he said. I mean, you could have said no. You could have fought. Once he'd come around, you'd already gone. That's convenient. She's probably lying. Attention seeking, fake crying. Even when we wear brightly coloured shoes and we don't touch a sip of booze, men still choose to murder us. But don't worry. Just flag down a bus. But don't worry, just flag down a bus. We know it's safer to say nothing and confirm to your gender role. Don't be too ambitious and certainly don't have goals, because these men hate progression. They want us to drown amidst our oppression. But times are changing. It's ours for the taking. Don't let them win and don't give in. We can't rewrite history, but we can create herstory. Enough is enough of the patriarchy. Let's introduce diversity universally. Daughter, auntie, niece, nana and mother. We're united as one. We are the other. We'll fight together one another. I know it's a lot to digest, thrown to the ground at a peaceful protest. For speaking your mind, you're under arrest. Talking of safety, I say this with my chest. It's for your own safety. It's for the best. Until we stop being murdered, we're never gonna rest. Because no amount of violence will have us silenced. We are a force to be reckoned with. Let's show what we can give. One voice, one stance, and as it stands, she has the world in the palm of her pretty little girly hands.
So, Felicity, everybody!
The American lady stood up.
Yeah. Come take a seat.
The American lady from Wandsworth stood up, guys.
Yeah. Woo. And if anything, she was the most reclined person in the audience. So to get a standing ovation from her.
That's Shay's lounges out the door.
Yeah, yeah. I'm loving that.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So sorry, I don't know your name and I feel bad that we're calling you she. I'm so sorry.
The American lady from Wandsworth.
Lou.
Lou. Lou. We love that.
Are you in fact American? No, you're not.
Absolutely not.
Lou, I'm so sorry.
No, you really are from Wandsworth.
I was riffing.
Oh, you were riffing. Well, it worked.
Wow.
It worked very
well. That's impressive.
We believed you.
Yeah, absolutely.
More
that's a character.
That was amazing.
That was fantastic, Soph. Really, really wonderful. And you were somebody, I mean, one of the reasons we picked this theme of learning and then sort of thinking, oh God, I've got to learn this again, is you're somebody who I think is kind of boldly powering through at the moment. You're like doing stand-up, you're doing performance poetry, you're very young and you're doing, you know,
you.
Oh, well, why don't, you know, you're making like short episodes, like sitcom episodes for BBC Three.
Yes.
But in them, you're dressed like a sixth former. You know, you're boldly, bravely learning in public as a very young person. So I wanted to ask you about that. Like, what gives you the courage? Do you ever feel anxious and think, right, I'm going to have to do it anyway? What strategies are you using?
Yes, I do feel anxious. I particularly felt anxious when someone watched the pilot on BBC and said, why is a 35-year-old playing a 15-year-old?
Who said that?
An internet troll.
Oh, okay. Well, no.
We take no notice of that.
But also, are there roles in your show going for 35-year-olds? Because that'd be... I'd love that. That'd
it's
be
yours.
Great. Thank you.
I think, like, the main thing is I've grown up watching... surprisingly, I know you've just watched that piece, but I do write comedy. But I've sort of grown up and I've watched white, straight, cis men dominate that narrative for a long time. So I feel like I have not only like a passion, but a responsibility to put myself there. Because I want other people that grew up as like northern working class, for example, to see themselves on TV and see themselves in screen and know that they can do those things. Because I think we're taught that we don't belong in those spaces. So I'm trying desperately to take up that space.
I think that's a really wonderful way of looking at it, to just say, not who am I to, but who am I not to? Because instead of going, oh, well, what if I'm no good? You're saying, if I don't take ownership of the landscape will say the same.
Yeah, of course. I think you can always sit back and think, oh, this shouldn't be happening, or there should be more of this, should be more of that. I spent so long doing that that I got to a point where I was like, I can help change that. Like, I can try and be, like, I want to see myself in these spaces and I want to see other people like me in these spaces. And nothing will encourage them more than seeing people like them doing that sort of thing, if that makes sense.
It does, yeah. And are you learning on the go? Do you ever think, like, oh, that crashed and burned there, but I know how to rebuild that now?
Yeah. My favourite saying is fake it till you make it. I think, like, is that yours, Lou?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you.
It's also
Lou,
why
I love you.
It's also why we thought she was American, by the way.
Yeah. I'm so sorry. Yeah, fake it till you make it. I think, like, I just try and be confident and nice. And I think if I mess up, hopefully being nice is more, people can focus on that more than the mistakes I've made, if that makes sense. But I'm very much learning on the job. With my threesome that I did for BBC Three, my agent was like, do a treatment. And I was like, Google, what is a treatment? So I'm just sort of teaching myself and surrounding myself with people who know what the fuck is going on. So I can try and pick that up.
I mean, it's whatever you're doing is working for you.
Thank you.
So I think I think your attitude is such a great one, which is there's no reason why I should know what a treatment is until I've been asked to write one. So why am I apologising for it? I'll look it up or I'll ask a question.
Yeah.
And then I will know. And then I'll have a go at it. And they'll say, that's not right. Do it again. And then I'll go, this second one. Yeah. And I always think that. Don't not do your first stand-up gig because it won't be as good as your 100th stand-up gig. Mm-hmm. Don't not do your 100th stand-up gig because it won't be as good as your 10,000th. Because there is no way of getting to your 10,000th without doing your first. Mm. Every comedian you love, every writer that you admire, every scientist that's, you know, come up with a vaccine, it's not their first go. I don't think the people that came up with the vaccine, I don't think it was their first go at coming up with science.
I really hope not. Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say, though, I think that idea of responsibility is a double-edged sword. It's like, it's so great that you're like, why the hell shouldn't I? But I think when you're the first in a lot of things, or you're one of the first in a lot of things, I worry that sometimes we, that sense of responsibility inhibits our fun. When there's a ubiquity of you, you can be any type of straight white man because you're just a comic, right? Mm. You don't have the responsibility of all these other titles or burdens. How do you still find the fun? Do you still find the fun? I hope you do.
I do.
It looked like you were having fun.
I'm having so much fun. I think because, like, without being too cliche, this is like what I'm doing at the moment. So writing and performing my own comedy and things like that is kind of what I've wanted to do for as long as I can remember. Yeah. So now I have the chance to do it. I'm making sure that that's at the forefront of it. Like, this is all I've ever wanted to do. This needs to be the most fun and, like, the most important thing to me at this stage. And then I can look back if I've made a mistake or been shit in 10 years' time and gone, God, that was fucking shit. But at the time, yeah, I've had such an incredible experience, you know. I'm trying to, like, take it as it comes, if that makes sense.
Yes, if at least if you enjoy it, you've got the enjoyment banked. So if you do look back and go, that wasn't as good as this, it doesn't matter because your enjoyment is banked. And I think you learn more from things you enjoy than things you... The anxiety can inhibit the process. Not that we can sometimes help having anxiety.
Yeah.
Catherine, in terms of that learning something again, like that we were talking about today, what have you found during the pandemic that you've had to... that you thought you'd conquered and then... it blindsides you?
I mean, everything.
Life.
Yeah, I mean, I genuinely have wondered if lockdown was easier for pessimists or optimists a lot during lockdown. Because I feel like at the start, it was worst for my friends with hope.
Mm.
They were shocked. Absolutely shocked. The whole time, they were like, can you believe this is happening? Whereas myself and other pessimists were like, I mean... Yeah.
Yeah. One of my friends.
This all checks out. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. One of my friends who's had anxiety for years said, it's finally happened and I was right.
Yeah.
And she was sort of like, it's happened. It's happened. I told you.
Yeah.
I told you. And you didn't believe. I was always like, come on, it's going to be great. And she was always like,
told you.
She was, she said she kind of relaxed because she was like, it's happened.
Yeah.
And I think, I mean, certainly the first 6 weeks was
a rest.
No, for me, I was...
I was like, sleepy time.
No. I was... I was... All I can describe it as I was withdrawing from the caffeine of humanity, and I had like... Oh, I was I was a disaster zone. I was like...
Oh, I grew into my disaster because it turns out I'm not a pessimist. I'm a nihilist. And the problem with nihilism is that you it does assume things will end. So I was like, yeah, this checks out. But then by day 365, I was like, okay, well, I think we get the gist, don't we? But I, so there was that, the sense of my sense of the world and where what levels of control we have. Also that I thought I was recovered from OCD. Turns out it's still lurking there. My partner of 5 years left me. So my place or my surety in the reality I was living in changed. Also, one thing that came up for me a lot in lockdown that I think is a lesson that you spoke to in your poem that I think women have to, people have to learn all the time is like, every time I get to a place where I think I'm like, I'm good with my body. You know what? I'm good with it. It changes. Or the rules change. Or the measurements of good change. Like I grew up with like heroin chic being good and now it's not that. It's like curvy but only in the right places. And overnight, you suddenly had to have a science degree to learn how to wash your face. I don't know how to wash my face. How do we wash our... Genuinely, everyone I speak to is like, oh, do you have the following 17 acids in your... I'm like, I don't... I just was... Are we... Is clean no good? So that came up. And then a sense of aging in when it felt like we were wasting time. Do you want me to keep listing anxieties?
No.
Should I stop?
This is...
I should stop now.
Everybody's really enjoying it because I can hear people going, yes. I've thought several times in my life that I'd come to this point where, because I was in a cult when I was younger, I felt so many times in my life, well, now I really have... No, I've cut time. The umbilical cord is cut. That will never come out and blindside me again. I am over that trauma. And what I have realized having therapy in lockdown, and I loved the Zoom, by the way, because I don't like having to go to therapist houses. I'm not interested in that at all. So I love Zoom therapy because I can't be late.
What?
Because that's what they make you do in North London. Yeah, they make you go to their house. And it's always a really expensive house and it makes you feel shit. I love Zoom therapy. I'm sure there are brilliant. Please don't write in. If you're a North London therapist, you are the exception and you're amazing. Don't write in. Because I know many and most therapists are incredible. Scum. I had a couple of tough ones, but not the right match. Anyway, the point is, I love Zoom therapy, but I learnt I will never be over the trauma. And that's such a revelation in itself. It's like, no, it'll visit you in different ways and you are getting stronger and you're much better than you were, but you will die with it.
Yeah.
And that's so relaxing because I don't have to get over it. I can just manage it and I can just expect it to come up again. And that's okay. It's just part of me. It's all part of the soup, as Hannah Gadsby says.
Yeah. I think it's weird to think that it goes. I've had the same therapist since I was 14.
So, oh my God, you're so lucky.
Yeah. So 11 years I've had my therapist and we still speak now.
Why are you laughing at that?
I was having a reaction.
Are you having a reaction?
14 to 25.
14 to 25, yeah. And we still talk about the same things that affected me when I was 14 that still affect me today, even though I've had 11 years of therapy.
Do you think if you got a new therapist, you get new problems?
Well, my therapist did say, is this working for you?
Are you working at them at a higher level or from a different angle? Because I think that's the best that can be expected.
Yeah, I think in uncovering like the trauma, I'm learning more and more about myself, which I'm starting to learn. That's what therapy is about. Mm. It's not about like fixing your problems. It's about learning about yourself. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk.
Yeah. That's what it is, isn't it? It's about deconstructing it so you can see it more clearly and step back from it and know when, that's that happening now. You don't go to therapy so that they fix it and it's over and it's done with.
No.
I am going to die with a full inbox.
Yeah.
I've accepted that.
Yeah.
My emails will never be done. Never. I will die with a full inbox. Some people will never be responded to.
Never.
And but then I love. Why does it cost £120, Deborah?
I don't know.
That should be fix money. Fix me.
I feel like I should clarify. My therapist doesn't charge me.
Is she your auntie?
Mic drop. She's my mum. Yeah. No, she's not. No, I think because...
Why does your therapist not charge you?
So basically, she was my counsellor in high school, and now we
does
have...
Does she get you vodka?
Catherine, she does get me vodka. Now we have a really nice relationship, and her deal is she really believes in me and thinks I'm going to be really rich and famous one day.
Yeah.
So we've got a deal that when I'm very rich and famous, I'll just give her a big... fat wad of cash for the therapy she's given me over the last 20 years.
Well, you're just going to back up a truck of cash and go, you've earned this.
You've earned it. Yeah,
yeah. Without you, I wouldn't be
here.
I wouldn't have all this money to drop off in one go.
Sorry, 100.
So the rest of us are meant to go to therapy knowing that our therapist does not believe.
Sorry.
Is that what we're meant to do? Wow.
Yeah, my
fuck
therapist.
Me.
I feel my therapist has a good amount of faith in me, but she doesn't. Look, I'm not 25. She doesn't think. She, in a very real way, she does not believe in me the way Soph's therapist believes in her. To some way down the line, just said.
I can't let her down now, otherwise I'll be in a fucking massive load of debt.
I mean, listen, I love that, and I love that she's doing that, and it's a real commitment. I wonder how many lessons feminists learn each generation that the last generation learned, and then we have to learn again from scratch. Because I feel like your amazing poem actually could have been performed in the 60s in a beatnik poetry cafe in Greenwich Village.
Yeah.
Probably not the flag down a bus bit. Topical. But that idea, like, I feel like sometimes we should spend time with older feminists and ask them... How can we cut to the end a bit? I rather worry, and this might be a bit controversial to say, I rather worry that young intersectional feminists feel we've reinvented the form so much that that older generation, it was sort of almost a different thing. And I think we would not be here without that generation. And I wonder if we need to collaborate more and build more bridges or be... I don't know. We had Rebecca Johnson on the other night, who was one of the Greenham Common women, and I feel like I learned so much from her and from her energy.
Of course we do. We absolutely do owe a huge debt and could learn loads. I think the problem is that to the same degree that you have like the loudest voice often gets the most attention. I think the problem is the loudest experienced feminists make it pretty tricky. Do you know, I think the queer movement could do a huge amount of learning as well from our past lessons, but somehow we don't because... So I think the problem with like intersectional feminism is that it does demand inclusivity. And when you have like some of the loudest voices for more experienced feminism being like trans exclusionary or, and that's not universally true, right? But the loudest voice being that is this sort of like, well, this is a new movement. It's modern when actually, obviously efficacy wise, we could absolutely learn a huge amount from our forebearers. And I think similarly,
and there are trans women of that generation and women who work shoulder to shoulder with them.
Oh my God, this is the, I mean,
there are lots of Gloria Steinems who are totally trans inclusive.
In the queer movement, I mean, if you go back, all you learn is that we are indebted to trans people. Like, like fundamentally, all of us are indebted to trans people in our community, and yet we just have a complete. But the loudest voices in the anti-trans movement right now are not queer people. They're often cis men who used to write really funny priest jokes, and that's sad. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yes is the answer, but also I think we need to be able to be more discerning and give platforms to people who are worthy of them.
Yes.
But of course we could learn.
I just wonder if there's
the
not
same
more
problem.
Intergenerational discussion and bridge building. Do you know what I mean? I wonder, am I wrong about this? Should I cut this out of the podcast? Am I going to get a load of emails going?
It's literally the same old shit. We still can't walk down the street. We still can't not get murdered. We still can't not be abused. We still can't earn the same amount of money. People who've been dealing with that for longer presumably know all the obstacles to dealing with it and possibly what's been most effective. Of course, I don't think that should be cut out of the podcast.
I don't know. What do you guys think about this? I'm sort of just trying to get a bit braver about what I say sometimes and just go... It worries me sometimes that I feel like we're not reaching back enough. And I think I might need to start getting some more older feminists on the podcast and say, what can you teach us?
But feminism is ageist because society is ageist because the reason Gloria Steinem was the perfect feminist at the time was because she was hot as well as being brilliant. She was, and there is no denying that she absolutely was. The reason Dolly did so much for feminism was because she made the boob joke before you did, and then she made her point. Like, the, we love, as a materialist society, we love attractive women telling us that women deserve rights. We don't love unattractive women making us feel bad.
It's true. And by unattractive, we are, of course, meaning stereotypically billboard patriarchal.
By every patriarchal standard, 100%. But it's also, why, like, let's have some self-awareness. It's also why I'm an acceptable queer woman in the eyes of people who don't often think that queerness looks like me.
You and I both.
Yeah. Right? It's like a palatable version of lesbianism.
It's certainly why you've both been booked tonight.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
That means the world. Good night. Yeah. Thank you.
It's the opposite end. So I think for a lot of people that aren't queer tend to understand homophobia, but on the opposite end of the spectrum to that is the people that like fantasize about a certain looking queer person, mm-hmm. which a lot of people don't take into account as being a form of homophobia. Like, some men, for example, will fantasize about a very conventionally attractive lesbian. And that, for me, is just as bad as somebody being outwardly homophobic to me. Like, it's just, they may as well
you
have
just
been.
You mean the fetishization of
lesbians and gay people? Yeah, yeah. 100%. Yeah. It's just as bad, if not worse. And it happens a lot more often, for me anyway. I don't think I've, thankfully, I've never been like homophobically targeted, but I have had the opposite end where I've been like fantasized about and fetishized by, you know, men, and that for me is just as horrible.
Yeah, I understand what you mean. I feel like society, to our theme, society keeps on learning the same lessons again, and it feels like when we get round and it comes out of living memory, it's like we have to start again. But hopefully we are starting from a surer foot. In a way, we're starting higher up the mountain. That's what I feel it's like. Like, when I've been looking into like queer rights recently, New York, the state of New York, 1980, it was legalized. It was decriminalized to be gay. I mean, 1980. Here it was only like 67. It was 67.
It was
it's
later
not
in Ireland.
That long ago.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it was only probably last Wednesday in Ireland, to be fair. Not to be rude, but.
We have to get the grannies on side. They're all on board now. Okay? And you know what? They're praying for you, Deborah. Here's the thing. I would think that it's not just an ageist thing. It's a classist thing, right? It's a race issue. I mean, I think you're right. We're starting further up the hill if you're a white feminist. But that's why we have to learn from other communities who are not the vocal center point for feminism. Because, yes, it's further up the hill. Like, there are issues being a queer person or a woman now, but, like, being a white woman is pretty much a golden ticket compared to so many other groups.
And
a white middle-class woman, you have so much privilege. Like, what is top of the priority list for most white middle-class feminists would look quite different to even just white working-class feminists. Never mind further and further otherness. Mm-hmm. So, yes, but I think it's like, we have to have perspective.
It's true. White women are the least criminalized group in the world.
Yeah,
it's true. There is no mule like a white woman who doesn't know she's carrying. Because your nerves can't even give you away. So if you, as a white woman, and I'm not saying this has happened to me, and I'm not saying it hasn't, but if you were carrying a small amount for personal use and you didn't know you had it on you because you forgot that it was in that evening bag, no one will check. They won't check.
Because you're changing the game, guys. You're changing the game. It's a big night out.
Because you are a fucking game changer.
Yeah.
And that's why you end up with a trophy. Yeah. Ultimately, you get that award. I think we might have missed the turnoff, gang.
Yeah, I think so.
Can I just say, though, a big shout out to... Is Helen Lederer in tonight? Okay, well, a big shout out to her anyway.
Then fuck Helen Lederer.
No, a big shout out to her because she has started and run those awards for 3 years and she's really trying to draw attention to women in the industry who are being overlooked. And she does these amazing awards for like unpublished novels, and then the novels get published because she has this incredible raft of judges.
That's cool.
And nice. Yeah, somebody won an award last night and she was like, I can give up my job at the job centre now, which I fucking hate. And, you know, stuff like that. And so I just think, you know, Helen Lederer is of an older generation and she is still there bringing up younger women and going, look, we can't believe we're still having to say, you know, look at the talent, but we are. And it is, there is something really extraordinary about that. So what I'm trying to say is I want to just be understanding that the slingshot that those feminists pulled back, that trajectory is here.
Old and women a lot have of value, those, lads.
Yeah, but a lot of those
That's
women...
That's the takeaway from the guilty feminist tonight.
No, but, you know, a lot of those women are women of colour and are trans women and are lesbians and are like, you know, there's... It is... So I'm just saying, let's personally learn from our mistakes cyclically, but let's try and go up the mountain and let's try and take our movement up the mountain with us and not reinvent the wheel.
Love that.
Woo! Reasonable.
Sophie's going to close us out with a poem. Soph Gillistian, everyone.
Niamh, this one's for you. Gillette. I stepped out of my pants and I couldn't see the floor. This mountain of hair was all I saw. Curly and black from the front to the back. It's getting out of hand, so I picked up a razor. Gillette was the brand. I felt the sharpness of the blade with my shaking hand. It was my brother's to shave his face. If he knew where it was going, he'd be disgraced. So I locked the bathroom door and I stepped into the water, legs either side of the tub. I got the soap and I started to rub. Bubbles masked my hair, it's time. I slowly glide the razor with care. Upwards against the root, I'm in the pursuit of a smooth finish. Time went slowly, it had been 5 minutes. I think the top is done. Time to tackle the underneath, through to my bum. The internet said, be careful with the lips, it'll bleed like a bitch. And that I soon discovered as the razor uncovered my first layer of skin. Blood mixed with water created this thin, murky red, and it bled and it bled, and I thought, shit, I'm going to have to tell my mum. I'm going to have to admit to using my brother's Gillette. I jumped out of the bath with speed and I pressed on some toilet roll to try and stop the bleed. I glanced down and I was disappointed with my first attempt. It was far from exempt. Patches of hair, short to long, I'd really fucked it up. I'd definitely done it wrong. But I wish I knew that body hair is beautiful, Niamh. It's natural for a woman. It's supposed to suit you. Instead, I gave into a societal expectation. I shouldn't have to remove my hair to achieve self-justification. Having body hair and being a woman should have a positive correlation. So let's end the negative stigmatisation, Niamh. Thank you.
So it's good to see everybody. Soph, do you have anything to plug?
Yeah, so my comedy threesome is currently available on BBC iPlayer. It's called Peckheads, and it's about three working class young women going through puberty and friendships and all the other things, lovely things that women go through.
It's like 3 minute episodes, yeah?
3 minute episodes, yeah, 3 3-minute episodes. And if you enjoyed my poetry, you can check me out on Instagram, at Soph Gillistian, and there's a whole library of interesting poems on there.
Thank you very much, Soph. Catherine Bohart, do you have anything to plug?
I have a podcast. It's called Trusty Hogs. So Reliable Pigs is a good way to remember it. Trusty Hogs, I've that. And also, I'm doing a show here at Soho Theatre from the end of February, 28th of February to the 12th of March. I'm 2 weeks downstairs. It's called This Isn't For You, but I would like you to come. and it's a stand-up show, and I think it's going to be, I hope it's going to be my best, because, well, otherwise I'm just getting worse sometimes. So, yeah, it should be, it's here.
Gross.
And
gross.
Yeah, it's here, and you can buy tickets on your way out. No pressure. But yes.
Also, on December 16th, tickets are just about to go on sale for an incredible show called Camp as Christmas. I'm co-hosting with Tom Allen.
Yes,
I know. Sandy Toksvig's on the bill.
What?
Woo. I know. And it is a fundraiser for an LGBTQ refugee group run for and by refugees running from homophobic violence, criminalisation. And the other half of the money is going to Can Do, which is alarming Syrian schools. It's a big queer celebration. And we've got some amazing auction things that we're auctioning off as well. There's a couple of special guests I can't tell you about, but they're really, really exciting. I'm not allowed to announce them yet, and I may not be able to announce them before the night. Wow. That's how exciting they are. And I've already announced Sandy Toxic.
We have to be there, queer.
I mean, I'm so excited about it. So it's December 16th. I think tickets are going to sell out pretty quickly.
Where is it, Deborah?
The Union Chapel in Islington.
Where do we buy tickets, Deborah?
Well, if you go to guiltyfeminist.com, there's some really exciting guests. I can't tell you. But I'm very excited.
It's going to be
a really great night. Also, we've got some other shows coming up. We've got one in December, Kathy Lett at the Globe Theatre, but not the freezing cold outdoor one, the indoor winter one, but it's beautiful Elizabethan, and when the candles burn down, the show is over. I know, it's lovely. Unlike here, where we've run over. So I'm really sorry, in anticipation. But there are other shows. Check them out on the website, guiltyfeminist.com. Also check out all the other exciting action. We've got some new podcasts coming out, all sorts of exciting things. So join our mailing list if you'd like to know more about any of those things. You can do that online.
Should Lou plug now?
Should Lou what, sorry?
Lou, do you have anything to plug?
Lou. Oh, thank you.
She's a good gal. She just said thanks.
Bring more people from Wandsworth back to our Soho Theatre shows.
Yes.
And a big shout out to everyone else who participated tonight. Catherine, Neve, anyone else who participated whose name I didn't get. You're all amazing.
Power to the girls, lady.
Yeah, thank you. Woo. Oh, thank you. A big round of applause for Amy in the lighting booth.
Yes.
It's really lovely to be back out. Please continuing to join us for shows. Next year, we're going to have a new raft of shows. We're going to have some Guilty Feminist book club nights. We're going to have some Guilty Feminist forums where we try and nut out problems, answers to problems, and get different minds on the job. We're going to have some comedy classics, which just funny, just funsies.
That sounds great.
We're going to have a lot of different sorts.
I feel like you're going to have to work on nut out as a... We could workshop it after. That's
what she said. So please,
we're sorry.
Please come out again now we can. You know, tell your friends. We want to rebuild the Guilty Feminist live community after we've all been in hibernation. I want to say thank you to everyone who came out tonight and your joy, your participation, your interest, your outrage, everything that you've brought into the room. We really love it. It means so much to us. And a big, big, big round of applause and thank you to Soho Theatre. Soph Galician, Catherine Bohart, your good selves for coming. I've been Deborah Frances White. We've been the Guilty Feminists. Good night. You have been listening to the Guilty Feminists with me, Deborah Frances White. Guest co host Catherine Bohart. Now, very special guest, Soph Galician. The recording engineer was Chris Sharp. The music was by Mark Hodge. The producer was Tom Selinsky for Spontaneity Shop. Thanks to Rachel Craftman, Jean DCO and everyone at Soho Theatre, as well as all of you for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com. I'm a feminist. Oh, is it you or is it me? No, it's me.
I'll be a feminist.
No,
I did do the task grab.
I'll go back and then you.
Well, I didn't. I should have. Maybe I could be one. I'd get more credit. Go on. If my girlfriend doesn't come back, I'm going to be a task rabbit.
The Guilty Feminist is provided exclusively from Acast. Find it wherever you get your podcasts. Just before we go, I want to introduce you to a new podcast I'm going to be doing with John Bercho. John's the Speaker of the House of Commons for many years. You might remember him for his trademark order. Over this 10-week series, I'm going to be grilling him about how our system of government actually works, because nobody really understands our parliament better. What is a whip? How can I get a backbencher to put forward a private member's bill, the way Gina Martin did with the upskirting bill? And who actually has the power anyway? Absolute Power with John Bercho will be available wherever you get your podcast starting on the 8th of December. And you can hear the first 10 minutes of episode one right now.
Britain has one of the oldest systems of government in the entire world. But nobody sat down and planned that system. It's composed of numerous bits and pieces cobbled together over hundreds of years as the need arose. I'm John Burko, and for 10 years I was the Speaker of the House of Commons. I've seen our system of government at its best and at its worst, and I'm fascinated by who gets to operate the levers of power and what people do with them. In this series, with the help of Deborah Francis White, I'll be looking at different aspects of our modern democracy, how they began, how they work, and how much influence each of them has. And we'll try to answer the question, where does power really come from? This is Absolute Power.
Hello to all of you listening on Her Majesty's Internet. I'm sitting here with former Speaker of the House of Commons, John Burko. Hello, John.
Hello. Good afternoon to you, Deborah.
This is the first episode of our new podcast, Absolute Power, in which John is going to be my guide through all of the bits and pieces of our great British democracy. You might be putting the great in inverted commas, listeners. I don't know. John, welcome to the world of podcasting.
Thank you. I'm delighted to dip my toes in the water. And I hope you feel the same at the end.
Yes, well, I'll let you know, but probably off air.
Indeed.
Now, on this first episode, we're going to be talking about a role which you know very well indeed, John, because you were in it for 10 years. It's the Speaker of the House of Commons. John's the most famous Speaker of the House of Commons, I would say, in our time. That's fair, isn't it, John?
People would insert the letters I-N in front of the famous, and some would not.
I think you were much enjoyed by the British public.
Oh, thank you. You say all the right things, Deborah. I'm tempted to continue this conversation indefinitely.
You sort of trademarked the word order in a way.
Order.
Exactly. It's uncanny. And so lifelike. Some of your what are seen on YouTube as your best put downs include, and I quote them here, that sticker on the subject of Brexit happens to be affixed to or in the windscreen of my wife's car. Yes, and I'm sure the Honourable Gentleman wouldn't suggest for one moment that a wife is somehow the property or chattel of her husband. That one particularly endeared me to you.
Thank you.
John, I am a well-known feminist.
Indeed.
Another of your more famous quotes, Mr. Angus Brendan McNeill, calm yourself. You may be a cheeky chappy, but you are also an exceptionally noisy one.
Indeed.
After the imposition of the migrant ban, this is my favourite now. This is my favourite. And this is when you really won me over, John. After the imposition of the migrant ban, I am even more strongly opposed to an address by President Trump in Westminster Hall.
Quite so.
There was so much cheering when you said that.
Well, thank you. I felt very strongly about it. It wasn't something contrived long in advance as a statement. It was a series of words uttered by me in response, if memory serves me correctly, to a point of order from a Labour MP from Cardiff South and Penarth, Stephen Doughty. And looking back, as I've very occasionally done, I'm reminded that I didn't have any notes or text in front of me. I simply sought to respond to his inquiry about how these visits were planned and what the arrangements would be, what the sort of guiding principles were as to whether such a visit should or shouldn't take place. And I tried to talk him through the procedure, but I did in the process make it clear that I myself was strongly opposed to a visit. And as you say, there was a notable reaction. I mean, there was hostile reaction as well, because you can't please everybody. And all I can say is that it fell within my bailiwick to take a view on the matter. And having taken a view on the matter, I thought it was sensible to express it.
Can I just reverse there? It fell within your
bailiwick.
What is that word? It sounds quite Hogwarts.
Remit.
Right. Okay. Domain. Is that a
responsibility?
A common word in Parliament?
It is probably not a common word, and it is no doubt an early example in this exchange, Deborah, of my eccentricity.
Well, listen, I'll be using Bailiwick the whole time. And it, actually, listeners, if you could start to make Bailiwick happen, we'd really appreciate it. Could you get Bailiwick trending? Could we?
We've only been going about 5 minutes and I'm being roundly ridiculed and teased.
No, I love words like Bailiwick, and I will be using it. And I am genuinely saying, let's make Bailiwick happen. People at home who've watched Prime Minister's Questions or other footage of Parliament will have seen you or your successor or your predecessor sitting at one end of the chamber and deciding who gets to speak. So if you're listening internationally, it looks like a sort of dining hall at a boys' private school. Very rowdy, lots of people shouting things, and somebody needs to keep order. Somebody needs to be in charge of that and saying, look, this is just getting too rowdy, and somebody needs to say who gets to speak now, who gets right of way. Somebody needs to conduct the traffic, if you will.
Yes.
That person was you. So can I ask...
I'm not sure I altogether appreciate the comparison with a traffic warden.
I'm not saying warden.
I mean, I know politicians aren't very popular, but it has to be said that traffic wardens aren't universally popular either.
Even less
but
popular.
Nevertheless, there is a resemblance.
No, I don't think a traffic warden.
I think
warden.
I prefer umpire or referee, but I maybe don't get to pick. You are the arbiter.
I'm thinking of more of one of those old-fashioned traffic directors, you know, with white gloves. Not somebody who comes and gives you a ticket, but somebody who stands in the middle and conducts, like an orchestra conductor.
Oh,
that's more flattering, isn't it?
Oh, very much more flattering. Very much warming to this.
So can you give me the headlines of what is the role of the speaker and what responsibilities does that speaker have?
Initially, the speaker was so called because he, and it was always a he, was expected to be the king's spokesman to Parliament. That is to say, he had the responsibility to communicate, upon pain of death, to Parliament the wishes, and in some cases perhaps even the demands, of the king. The story of the evolution of our history from a very powerful monarchy to a modern democracy means that today the Speaker is not the Queen's spokesman to Parliament, but rather Parliament's spokesman...
Spokesperson
to the Queen, exactly. And so the responsibility of the Speaker is to communicate to Her Majesty what Parliament has decided, what acts, for example, it has passed, which await her royal assent, but which is understood in the modern context to be a constitutional necessity, but also a constitutional formality. What is the Speaker's job, in a nutshell? To keep order, encourage people to take part, and try to cut down on the number of people excluded altogether as a result of bad behaviour. Questions are the result of an electronic ballot, which is conducted independently of and without any involvement by the Speaker. And if they're drawn in the ballot, then they're on the order paper, that is to say, the agenda, the list of questioners for the day. But aside from those people, Deborah, drawn lucky in the ballot, there is scope for supplementary questions by other members of Parliament.
So just to be clear, who's asking these questions and who is answering these questions?
Overwhelmingly, people asking the questions are members of Parliament, but they are not, members of the government. And the people answering the questions are, members of the government. The reason I underline that is that it really speaks to the essence of parliamentary democracy, which is about the accountability of government, of what we often call the executive branch of our political system, to Parliament, to the legislature.
And so you won't see members of government asking questions because they should be able to do that in the meetings they have.
Yes. Ministers have their own opportunity to raise matters of concern, for example, to their constituents, with their ministerial colleagues, either in private meetings or conversations or in correspondence. And actually, that's true of the Speaker as well. The Speaker doesn't ask questions in the chamber of ministers. And people often used to say, Mr. Speaker, how do you, given that you're the Speaker, represent your constituents? How can you ask questions, given that you're not allowed to ask questions in
I'd
the chamber.
I'd like to know that too, because if I were in your constituency,
yes,
and you had to remain neutral the whole time, I'd be slightly annoyed.
Yes, I totally get that, Deborah, and you would be amongst a very large number of people in the Buckingham constituency, by no means all personally hostile to me at all, who did feel that way. My answer was, and remains, that I represented my constituents in correspondence with ministers and in meetings with ministers. And I remember remarking to my private secretary that I was very struck by the speed with which these ministers were replying and by their seniority. Mm-hmm. And he said to me, oh, there's no surprise about that, Mr. Speaker. It's a mark of very considerable disgrace if a minister so hacks off the speaker that the speaker demands to see the minister to remonstrate. So I, struck by this, said, oh, I see. So if I were annoyed with Jack, I'd go to see him at the Ministry of Justice, would I, to complain? To which he instantly replied, no, Mr. Speaker, in those circumstances, you don't go to the Minister of Justice to see Mr. Secretary Straw. Mr. Secretary Straw comes to see you in Speaker's House for a meeting without coffee. Now, that never happened, Deborah. That never happened, to be fair.
Absolute Power is part of the Acast Creator Network and the House of the Guilty Feminist. For more information, visit absolutepowerpodcast.com.